You are listening to a Bible talk recorded at the 1983 Western Christadelphian Bible School at Manuka. This is a class given by Brother Ted Sleeper titled Naomi and Ruth.
This woman, drawn of Gentile parentage, being drawn into this relationship with the Jews of Israel, and having a faith that is so remarkably different from God's own people. Here is a faith that seems to grow and blossom out of its simplicity and childlikeness. And yet I'm not sure if we always recognize that in the book of Ruth itself, there is this same dramatic contrast presented to us of the continual compromising and failure of Israel on the one hand, and yet the simple, childlike faith of a Gentile on another. And it's this which we will focus our attention upon for the few moments that we have in this class. Now, I was just asking Morris, and he was giving me some kind of strange answer, so I never did get the full truth from this one. The book of Ruth itself is set in the time of a famine, which had apparently finally descended down to Bethlehem of Judah. Interestingly, the house of bread was struck with famine of bread. Now, there's a marvelous irony of what's going on in this very important town of Bethlehem of Judah. Now, what caused this famine in the land is the question I asked, and maybe I'll have to ask Steve, since he's had some background study on the book of Judges. I'm not sure whether it was the changing seasons and a famine that was wrought by these cycles. We'll talk more about that as we get through this. Or perhaps it was the Midianite bands that used to surge up and down through the land and strip away the crops that they had raised that year, and therefore left many in Israel destitute of their daily bread. I'm not certain which it was, but at any rate, it did find its way eventually to the house of bread, Bethlehem in Judah. Now, this contrast of the wavering faithfulness of God's people with the simple faith of a Gentile is presented to us in the very first chapter of the book of Ruth, where we look at the family of a man, Elimelech, and the progress of his life, and then we see this contrast drawn sharply with that of this Moabitess woman that's brought within this family's house. Now, from the beginning, when Elimelech and his family decided to make a choice to move to the greener pastures of Moab, you might put it in this sense, we find, brethren and sisters, there is a continual series of troubles that comes upon them after he makes this choice to go over to Moab. And I'm not sure how you feel about this, but as I have reflected upon this, I have seen in this what is very, very common in my own life, and perhaps it's common in yours. Just like Steve has pointed out time and again, when you look at the surface of a situation, you look at your own desperate plight and you say, well, this is terrible, and you look for a way out, because God has promised a way out, has he not, in the times of affliction and difficulty. And as you're looking around for this way out, you look over there and you say, oh, it looks so reasonable and right. Now, they're not having any problem over in that part of the country or over there or in this particular job offer that I have right there. That looks perfect. It looks so wise. The same decision. He looked at this and he said, well, it looked reasonable. There's nothing wrong with me leaving my inheritance and just taking a few years' sojourn over the land of Moab until this thing kind of blows by. And yet,
What we're presented here in this book is that was a fatal compromise that Elimelech made. And you scratch your head and you say, well, why should this be so? And the answer that comes is that Elimelech, as with Israel, should have learned a lesson long ago from their history about the circumstances of their lives. For example, the well-known passage, which all of us must know, goes something like this. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness to humble thee and to prove thee and to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, nor thy father, neither did thy fathers know. Just keep that in the back of your mind. And another little passage along the same lines. And it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and all his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Cursed shalt thou be in the field. Cursed shalt thou be in the city. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store. And on, with the very opposite of a blessing, which involves a multiplication of something. This was a taking away, a subtraction, division, if you like. Why hadn't they learned the lesson, brethren and sisters? It wasn't the land that took away the bread from the house of Bethlehem, Judah, and from the household of Elimelech. Or it wasn't the Midianites or some other enemy that had ravaged the land that took it away. Nor was it the land that gave them bread. Why couldn't they understand this lesson? It is God that gives, and it is God that takes away what we have. And so the famine was his doing. It wasn't the accident of the cycles of nature. It wasn't the accident that the enemy just happened to come into the land, if that was the cause of it. The famine was caused by God, that they might learn something. Would his people now remember? Later on, the children of Israel experienced similar types of afflictions. And through another prophet, Amos in this case, just listen to these words. He says, I have given you, notice the emphasis, I have given you cleanness of teeth in all your cities and want of bread in all your places. Yet you have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. I have withholden the rain from you when there were yet 3 months to the harvest. And I caused it to rain on one city and not on another. And the piece of ground whereon it rained not withered. So two or three cities wandered unto one city to drink water, but they were not satisfied. Yet you did not return unto me, saith the Lord. And so that brings to mind a proverb, perhaps, that Solomon wrote, which would sum it up in simple words for us. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he is delighted. So God was chastening and disciplining his people Israel. He was disciplining all those that lived in Bethlehem of Judah. He was disciplining and chastening the house of Elimelech for their good and for their salvation. He doesn't bring torment into the lives of his children just for the sheer delight of seeing them suffer. He brings it that he might develop in them those things which will endure. But as we look back in the book of Ruth, please turn there and keep your finger there, please, throughout our consideration. What do we see that Elimelech did? We find that Elimelech, verse 1, a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the land of Moab, he, his wife, and his two sons. He just didn't submit, brethren and sisters. He didn't, or perhaps he just couldn't see beyond the terrible circumstances that had come down now upon his household. He just couldn't see that there was something beyond. There's something was involved in these circumstances that surrounded his life. And so he wrestled with a dilemma, brethren and sisters, that I'm certain many of you here have had to wrestle with or shall wrestle with sometime in your life. A deep, burning dilemma. Should I allow my family to suffer here in Bethlehem? Or should I take my sons and my wife somewhere else so that they will be spared this suffering? That's a serious choice, isn't it? It's a difficult dilemma to wrestle with. And Elimelech, when faced with this choice, finally decided he would leave. He would not submit. And so he went out. This man named Elimelech, verse 2, and his wife named Naomi, and his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they came into the country of Moab, and they continued there. So they settled down. And so the course of their life now had been changed. There was a choice that removed them from God's land and from God's hand, took them out into what seemed to be a far better situation. It seemed a lot more comfortable. He was able to settle down now. He would have bread for his family. And it ended in disaster. And that is so often true with choices that we make, brethren and sisters, when we decide to compromise and not submit into the discipline of God's hands. And we read verse 3 of a heart-wrenching experience in the life of Naomi. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left all alone now with her two sons. Think about it, brethren and sisters. Isn't it inevitable that when one submits to a compromise, adopts an expediency for resolving a painful situation when one is under trial in their life, some way of escape that seems so right to us, but is really, we see it as a compromise, it's an expediency, but it seems to get us out of all our troubles. Doesn't it make sense, brethren, that God could not possibly bless this kind of choice? How can he? Because if he blessed Elimelech, all it says to Elimelech is, well, that's good, Elimelech. Every time you compromise and decide to not put your trust in me, I'm going to bless you. What a good way to reinforce faithfulness. Disaster had to come. He had to step out of one thing where there was tremendous turmoil and difficulty in his life and suffering, and he had to take a step down into something which was even more difficult, which brought even more suffering. He had to demonstrate that it isn't always best to flee from the disciplining hand of God. God had no choice in this matter. He had no options. Well, with her husband dead, Naomi now was faced with a choice. For Elimelech was the head of the house, and he had made the decision. Now it fell to Naomi. She now was faced with a decision. She could take into herself the bitterness of these lessons that she had now
learned and endured the bitterness of these circumstances, she could face it head on and say, it was a bad choice. My sons, let us go back to our house in Bethlehem. This was God's chance. He had given this now to Naomi. Here was the opportunity to put everything right. But what happened, brothers and sisters? Isn't it true that when you're caught in a situation where you've, like David was, which is, to me, hits very deep in me when I think about that time in David's life. But when she had, when a compromise had been made once and you'd moved over here and you're faced with troubles over here, isn't it so easy to continue on that path of compromise, to just take the next step? Because it's very hard to change and to face the fact that you may have done something that wasn't altogether what God would like you to do. And so one step down the road of compromise led to a second one, and we read in verse 4 that they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. So here was another way of escape. And Naomi says, right, my sons, go out, take wives from among the women of Moab, and let's settle down in this land. And perhaps you can begin to build the house of my husband back up again. What else could she do? It seemed like this was the most reasonable choice to make in the circumstances. Have her sons marry and settle down, and even if they were in a foreign country, I know it wasn't the best situation in the world. We don't really like this, but it looks like this is the best thing for us to do, sons. But had she forgotten that God had commanded that they were not to marry foreign wives? That this would only draw them away after the even... I suppose she could have rationalized, after all, was not Lot the nephew of Abraham, and was not Moab then one of the children of Lot? And after all, they're practically relatives of ourselves. I'm sure we could think of justifications for doing this, but God had commanded not to take foreign wives. But whatever the reasons for Naomi's lack of faith, the end result again was disaster and bitterness and sorrow for Naomi. Verse 5. And Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them. And the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Can you imagine the bitterness that this woman would feel at this time? Here she had gone with her husband, and then she had made choices in her life as well, and things seemed all right for about 10 years, and all of a sudden the hand of God goes out against her. And to compound the bitterness of having to live this desolate life without her husband, and maybe begin to have some kind of joy in her life with her two sons, God takes away her two sons. And now she's left with no one. Her two sons, the husband that she loved, gone. But that's also very true to lives, brothers and sisters. Where we're caught, as we've said before, in these bitter times in our lives, and we're looking around for the way of escape, and we adopt the expediency, and the next thing we know, the moment we've got into this thing seems so good for a little period of time, and then all of a sudden, the whole house just crumbles in upon us, and we find ourselves in far worse situation. And if only she had taken the steps that would have turned her on the right road, God would indeed have given her the right way of escape that would involve no compromises and would have led her up out of this pit of suffering. And God's promise would have proved to be very, very true for her. But Naomi couldn't see this. She didn't see this. Whatever the reason, who knows? But you know, brethren and sisters, this is true. And I'm sure some way all of us have a bit of Naomi in our lives. You know, True faith is not something that suddenly turns on like a light. It's not instantaneous. Real faith in God is something that takes the agony of bitter experiences, and it only comes very, very slowly. And so it was with Naomi. This last blow that came from the hands of God was the blow that was needed to begin to draw Naomi out of the bitter circumstances of her life, to prepare her in her heart and mind, now that she has nothing left, to turn and go back to God's land. And now, just like David in that 1 Samuel chapter 30, when he had reached the very depths in despair and bitterness, when everything had been stripped from his life and he had nothing, at that point, he begins to lift up his head. And in that act, God begins to open the door for David and, as we shall see, for Naomi. Verse 6. Notice the timing of this. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how that God had visited his people in giving them bread. Remember what we said in the beginning? It isn't the land that took away the bread. God took it away. And now she had heard God had visited them and given them bread back again. So the house of bread was full of bread. So with the door open, she could see some way of now coming out of this situation on a God-given path. She takes it. She takes the two daughters-in-law that she has. She rises up, puts her belongings together, and goes back home, broken, embittered by years and years of strain in her life, of agony. You can imagine, brothers and sisters, can't you? The name Naomi means pleasant. You can imagine the figure of this woman when she was leaving for Moab. Her face would have been smooth, probably beautiful, stately. She probably carried herself well, coming from probably a fairly rich family. Under Elimelech's care. Then imagine her coming back, broken by the years of experience, the scars, in a sense, of grief, indelibly imprinted into the wrinkles, the strain that just shows around her face, gaunt. And you can imagine why the people had the response that they did in verse 19. So there the two of them went, this Ruth and this Naomi. They went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass when they were coming up to, the road up into Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, "Is this Naomi? Oh, we remember her. She was such a beautiful woman and such a wonderful woman. And she had everything going for her. Is this Naomi?" You can imagine her, shawl over her head, bent, trudging up the road. You know what bitterness does to your heart, don't you? You know how a person bitter of soul looks and how they just broadcast that feeling of depression as they move along. And so it was with Naomi. Verse 20, she says, "Call me not Naomi, call me bitterness, Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me?" She had learned something. You notice she knows the source of all her grief. And now she is prepared to endure that. Well, things begin to change. Scenes are shifting. Circumstances are beginning to shift. Not just that there was a shift in Bethlehem and now that there was food where there wasn't before. There is a shifting that is going on as God is at work in the lives of these two women. This is the beauty of it. We now begin to take a look at this young woman who married into the family of Elimelech. And it's a startling contrast to Naomi. Naomi, with all the bitterness that she now carries back to her home, she brings with her a woman that has this childlikeness of faith and this childlike trust in the God of Israel. And you ask yourself, well, where did this come from? Did this come from Mahlon? Did this come from Naomi herself? Where did she begin to gain this faith in the God of Israel? You see, with Ruth, as you follow that through and as you're well familiar with the story, with Ruth there was no such thing as expediency or compromise. She was, just think about this for a moment. For her, Yahweh, not Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, Yahweh would be her God. Israel, not Moab, would be her people. And no, she said, she would not leave Naomi. Verse 16. Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, Naomi, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people. Thy God, Naomi, will be my God. And where thou diest, I will die. And where and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me. And the more also, if aught but death part thee and me. The faith, the blind faith of this young woman, brethren and sisters, amazes me. And I'm certain it must amaze you. Where it came from, as I said, who knows. But she was prepared to leave her home. The security of her family that she could have gone back to, the security of being with her own people that she was familiar with, the security of the sure knowledge, the fairly sure knowledge that she would have another husband. And she left all of this for what? For a people that she didn't even really know? For a land that she had never really seen in her life? For a God that she had what? Seen only the bitterness that came from his hands. And she was a Gentile outside the covenant. What prospect of hope had she in this land over here? Well, all of these questions. It's amazing. All of these questions were there. And yet she seemed to have put them one side and said, I will cleave unto you, Naomi, and I'm not going to leave you. And so she went out, not knowing whither she went. And God blessed her. Look at this in chapter 2. It's a marvel of the work of God in the lives of faith like this. Verse 2, chapter 2. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. So they had to have some kind of food, obviously, to maintain themselves. So Naomi, dear and affectionate as she was for mother-in-law, said, let me go out and glean with the young women so that we can have some food. And so she goes out, verse 3, and came and gleaned in a field after the reapers. And her hap was, you know, the word, an old English word for, it just happened, you know, she just casually walked along, said, this looks like a good field, I'll go work in this one. Just happened, for some odd reason, it just happened. She lighted on a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. And we know what that's setting things up for. But it just happened. And you know, brethren and sisters, these are the kind of happy accidents that always seem to happen to those that have true faith and this kind of vibrant faith that was evidenced in Ruth. And so it continued for Ruth. We know that she was twice blessed more. First, she was blessed with the husband, this very Boaz, in whose field she just happened to stumble in. Happened, yes. And she was blessed with a man-child. To
carry on the household of her beloved mother-in-law. And perhaps the greatest of all blessings which were given unto this woman was what we read at the end of the book, and something of which Ruth will find out a great deal about when she rises in the resurrection from the dead and is able to greet, first of all, her son Obed, who bore Jesse, who bore David. And sure, she would be overjoyed to hear the things that about the life of David, and then to know that in the line of David came the very one who made her life possible, even Jesus Christ. So, brethren and sisters, do you admire that faith of Ruth, that childlike faith with all the happy accidents that happen in the life of faithful people like Ruth? Do you feel sometimes that you're glad you're not Naomi, who had to go through all those bitter circumstances in her life? I'd like to suggest, brothers and sisters, that you shouldn't especially be glad that you're not Naomi. Do you realize that what we're told in this book is that ultimately God blessed both those women? He didn't just bless Ruth, he blessed both those women. It is true that the paths of these two women were entirely different. For Naomi, it had been a path that had been leading downhill for many years. It was full of bitterness, grief. Her face showed it when she returned home to her own house. And the other one had a life that was filled with these happy accidents that gladdened the heart. But both paths, brethren and sisters, develop the faith that God was and still is seeking in his people. And you know, there's a mixture, probably, of Ruth's and Naomi's lives in all our lives. There is the life which goes upward from the moment God calls us and seems to go ever upward. And there is also perhaps that portion in our life which descends first deeply into the agony of trial and bitterness of trial before it rises up to the heights. Well, whatever way it is, brethren and sisters, let us not complain about the bitterness of God's dealings with us, or the bitterness that we feel when God deals with us. For all that God really is seeking and asking of us is that we be prepared to walk with him and not forsake him. Just in a final moment of thought and meditation upon these considerations, why don't you look with me together in Psalm 103, and we'll just close with a hymn after this too. Psalm 103, first verse, bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfieth thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name.